Two schools of thought compete for dominance in American political and economic culture. One school, let's call it the hand-up school, thinks in terms of helping struggling individuals and companies gain a foothold in the economy. The other school, let's call it the job creator school, holds that putting government money into the hands of existing businesses, big ones included, helps workers and the economy the most. The job creator school appears to be winning, certainly when viewed in the context of a recent report. That report is called Subsidizing the Corporate 1%, and the title alone speaks volumes. The report comes from a group called Good Jobs First, for which Philip Matera, is the research director and our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Philip, thanks so much for joining us today.
Happy to be here.
Tell us about what Good Jobs First is about and how long it's been doing this work.
Well, we're a nonprofit, nonpartisan research center. We're kind of a watchdog on economic development accountability. We've been around since 1999, and basically what we do is keep an eye on the practice of state and local governments of giving out subsidies to companies mainly in the name of job creation. And our concern is that there are lots of problems with this practice, and so we try to keep an eye on it and criticize what we think is wrong.
This report apparently was made possible by an upgrade to your subsidy tracker database. Can you give us some history there?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that we've been pushing for throughout our history is better disclosure, better transparency, so that the public knows which companies are getting these subsidy packages. And there's a lot of unevenness from state to state in terms of how good a job they do in making this available, and particularly how much they make available online. But overall, over the past decade, there's been a lot more information that's been put on official state and local government websites. The problem is that it was often hard to find that information. It was scattered among many different places, and you couldn't search more than one program or at best one state at a time. So what we did was to begin to collect all this information from these disparate sources, put them together into one big database that we called Subsidy Tracker, which we introduced about 3 years ago. But I think was an important advance, but we realized that it was still difficult to get the full picture if you wanted to know, for example, how much a large company like Intel or Nike, to take some examples from your state, were getting in overall subsidies. So what we did over the past 6 months was to look at all of our individual entries and tag them with the name of their parent company. And this allowed us to come up with aggregate totals for all the big corporations, and it led to some interesting findings, which we summarized in the Corporate 1% report.
So in the process of tagging the subsidiaries with the parent company names, then did some of these parent companies just shoot up the list from somewhere in the low 80s or something up to near the top?
Yeah, well, the thing was that some subsidiaries have a name similar to that of the parent, and others don't. So before we made this enhancement to the database, you would have no way of seeing the total for the parent company. And then in some extreme cases, like Berkshire Hathaway, Warren Buffett's company, which is essentially a conglomerate of several hundred companies, it would have taken an enormous amount of work to figure out, what their totals were. But now with our tagging, each individual entry is now associated with a parent, and we have summary pages for each of nearly 1,000 parent companies showing you the totals for that company and then a list of all the individual entries that go into those totals.
And so, Philip, how would you characterize the overall finding of this report?
Well, we always suspected that large companies were getting a significant share of the total subsidy dollars, but we never realized quite how big that share was. And now we were able to show that based on a kind of a broad definition of big business, that group of companies account for about three-quarters, about 75% of the total subsidy dollars that state and local governments have disclosed and that we've been able to capture and put in the database. So what, you know, what that's really showing is that, you know, this limited group of companies, which we're, you know, informally calling the corporate 1%, you know, are getting more than, you know, much more than a large share. They're getting an overwhelming share of the total subsidy dollars, and this raises all kinds of policy issues. You know, is this good practice to give so much money to these large companies and such a smaller portion to small companies?
Let's pick it up with that question and the general discussion of where subsidies should go in your minds. You at the Good Jobs First, and also our listeners as well. We'll come back and talk more with Philip Matera about this report on big subsidies to big business. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange. We'll come back with Philip and take your phone calls and emails when we return in a minute 20. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on Jefferson Public Radio's News and Information Service. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We're talking today about subsidies to businesses to help them develop economically. And the findings of a report called Subsidizing the Corporate 1% that indicates that a lot of the subsidies go to big companies that are already big. They didn't get there because of the subsidies. Philip Matera is our guest. He's with the organization that put the report together, Good Jobs First, where he's the research director. And you can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about the proper application of subsidies in business and economic development. 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. Email address jx@jeffnet.org. Philip, what period of time is represented in this report? Is there a starting year, ending year that is uniform?
Well, we actually, in our database, we tried to go back as far as we could in terms of finding examples of subsidies. And basically, our data is of two kinds. One is consists of the lists that state and local governments publish. Either they put on their website or, in some cases, we've gotten unpublished lists. But those lists can be inconsistent from state to state, so we've tried to supplement that with independent research, starting with what we call the mega deals. And these are deals worth at least $75 million or more that have been given to companies. They often involve packages of state and local money. And we went back and we've reconstructed 240 of these mega deals going back as early as the late 1970s. And the oldest one we found was a deal that Volkswagen got when it built its original assembly plant in Pennsylvania in the late 1970s. It later shut that plant and only recently came back to the U.S. and, you know, built a plant in Tennessee where there's a big controversy about union organizing that's been going on. But that's the oldest we have is from 1976. And then we have, you know, limited numbers of entries from there, you know, through the 1980s and into the 1990s. But I would say that the vast majority of the data that we have is for the past 20 years.
All right. But as far back as you can find is basically the answer to the starting point. And is it just state and local subsidies we're talking about here? No payments from federal government?
For now, we do have plans to add some federal data, although at the federal level it's a little different because there's less money given out directly to specific corporations at the federal level. There, it's done more with, let's say, changes to the tax code that give advantages to certain categories of companies. But at the state and local governments are the ones who make the deals with specific companies more often.
So when we mention subsidies, then this is important to consider because particularly in, and you mentioned that Intel is one of the big ones, number three on your list here in terms of the dollars pulled in state and local subsidies. Do you include tax breaks and identify those as subsidies? Are those applied as dollar amounts to the subsidy total?
Definitely. You know, if it's a tax break that is given for a specific company, you know, in the form of a tax credit or a property tax abatement or tax increment financing, or companies that are building new facilities often get an exemption on paying the sales tax on the building materials and the equipment that they're going to be using for the new facility, and that could add up to a significant amount. So there are a lot of different kinds of tax breaks that are involved. There also are other kinds of cash payments. You know, sometimes companies are just given, you know, a chunk of money as an incentive to invest in a certain place. Sometimes there are infrastructure improvements that are made right on the company's property, on the facility. We count those. Sometimes companies are reimbursed for certain expenses like worker training costs. We include that as well. Sometimes they're given free land to build a new facility. So we use the term subsidy in a very broad sense to include all these kinds of tax breaks, cash assistance, and in-kind assistance.
All right, let's dive into the actual specifics of the report. I've got the portion of it, that the page that shows the top 100 parent companies. And right up there at the top of the list is Boeing, the aircraft maker, with more than twice the nearest competitor, to use that term. Subsidy value to Boeing, $13,174,075,797. And again, more than twice Alcoa at about $5.6 billion. What is it about Boeing that brings in so much money to it in this way?
Well, they're very aggressive at seeking financial assistance from governments. I mean, the largest portion of that total represents the two big deals that Boeing has gotten from the Washington legislature. It's basically told the legislature, look, either you give us these big multi-year tax breaks, or we're going to move production, you know, away from the Seattle area. And the state has often given in to this. Sometimes the company moves their production anyway, the way they did when they moved their Dreamliner assembly operations to South Carolina, where they got a big package from that state. And then, you know, recently, you know, Boeing played this kind of game again and said that, you know, for its next aircraft, it wanted a big package from the state, and the legislature went along with that. Then it said it also wanted major concessions from the unions, and the unions originally balked at that, and the company then went and basically solicited a bunch of offers from other states. And the unions then had a change of mind and change of heart, and they revoted and accepted the concession. So Boeing got what it wanted, both from the legislature and from the union. So the main thing is that, you know, Boeing drives a very hard bargain. You know, it feels like it has all the advantages in these situations, and it can get very lucrative deals either from its traditional manufacturing center, you know, around Seattle, or when it decides to go elsewhere. I mean, the company moved its headquarters to Chicago at one point,
right,
and got a big subsidy package from Illinois. So it plays this game in many different ways.
You mentioned right off the top that your organization, Good Jobs First, is nonpartisan, but does it take a particular stance on union versus non-labor?
We tend to think that unions are a good thing for the American workforce. So, that's not some people think that's a partisan issue. We don't. I mean, we think that, you know, the collective bargaining is a good thing for the country, for the economy. So, we're generally sympathetic to to unions.
Philip Montero is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. He is the research director of the organization Good Jobs First. We are talking about big business and big subsidies in the form of this report called Subsidizing the Corporate 1%, which tracks local and state subsidies for businesses and finds that a lot of big businesses get the big subsidies. Do the rich get richer, you might say. Join us on the Exchange with your thoughts on this. 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. Our email address, jx@jeffnet.org. Here is Skeeter in Eugene. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Philip Montero.
Hiya. I'm thinking these subsidies that these big corporations are getting really is money out of our wallets. You know, it's tax money. And, sir, would you please talk a little bit about federal subsidies to the energy industry, particularly oil, natural gas, the nuclear industry, and specifically, what has the Price-Anderson Act done for nuclear power? Thank you.
All right. Thanks for the call, Skeeter.
Okay. I mean, that's it's a little bit outside the scope of our work. As I say, we don't yet have any federal information in our database. But it is true that there is enormous, federal money that has traditionally gone into particularly the energy industry and, providing kind of insurance guarantees for the nuclear power industry. It was really the only way that that industry, could really get off the ground. The other point that, the caller made is true, that it is money out of the pockets of taxpayers. And when corporations pay less in taxes, it means it's either that other taxpayers have to pay more, or that essential services have to get cut, and sometimes both of these things happen. There's really a fairness issue, even just between big business and small business, because often when large corporations get these deals, it means that smaller companies, often homegrown companies, have to make up the difference, and their taxes get increased, and it's harder for them to grow and to prosper. Some of these tax breaks come directly out of the money that is supposed to be going for things like schools and public safety. So, you can see cuts in essential areas like that. And, the irony of it is that, many of these subsidies are going to companies that don't really need them. This is particularly the case with some of the high-tech companies that get these subsidies. A company like Apple, really has more money than it knows what to do with, yet every time it builds one of its data centers or server farms, it tries to get a big subsidy package as well.
Well, but that's an interesting case study then, and Apple's number 38 on the list with $446,485,000 in subsidies. Over the time you tracked here, which amounts to, and that is six subsidies got them to $446 million. So do the math and divide 446 by six, and that's a pretty impressive figure per subsidy. Why do the communities go after this? Because these, if we're talking data centers, they don't tend to employ very many people. It's really the construction part that brings the money in, isn't it?
That's right. I think the problem is that public officials are kind of desperate to give the impression that they're doing something to create jobs. And, traditionally, this whole economic development system, was used to attract manufacturing jobs. Well, as we all know, there are not a lot of manufacturing jobs being created in the U.S. these days, so officials have to look for something else. And, often those are distribution center jobs, and sometimes they're data center jobs, even though, as you're right, in the data centers, they can be a really, tiny number of of positions, and yet officials still seem willing to throw a lot of money at companies for these facilities. Google has gotten big money in your state in those situations.
True, they've built a center, I believe, near Prineville, or at least are planning on building one near Prineville. But this again is the example. Google a little less wealthy than Apple, but I'm a little surprised that local communities don't look at Apple and go, "And you got how much in the bank?" And say, we don't need to give you a subsidy here.
And because what they really are looking for in these data centers is cheap electricity. That's how they decide where to locate these things, not The subsidies end up just being unnecessary icing on the cake.
Which brings up, I guess, the major point then about economic development generally, which is how we expect it to be conducted. I mean, I've talked to people who are in the economic development field who said you don't lead with incentives. You encourage them that, you know, you got good workers, you got a good area, good place to live, et cetera. And if it becomes necessary to start laying out some money offers, that's when you bring them in, but not up front.
Well, the problem is you have these kind of third parties, these middlemen called site location consultants, and they're the ones that often are going out doing the scouting or the prospecting for a large company when it's, you know, thinking of a new facility. And they're the ones that frequently put the pressure on the state and local officials to kind of pony up bigger amounts in subsidies and make them think that they've got to sweeten the pot. And, you know, they set up these kind of competitions, either public competitions the way that Boeing did recently or that Tesla is doing now, you know, with this big electric car plant that it wants to build. Or they do kind of behind-the-scenes competitions, but in either way, officials end up, you know, overpaying for these jobs.
So not to be obtuse here, but what do the companies usually end up doing with the money? Is there much tracking of that? I mean, is it just to build infrastructure? Is it to do some training for the workers? Is it capital? Does it go straight to the bottom line?
Well, money is fungible. I mean, ultimately, it can go to the bottom line. You know, it's basically what you're doing is you're with these subsidies is that you are offsetting costs of, you know, investment and capital costs. So if a company is spending less on construction, on training, on equipping, you know, the new facility, they got more money to use for something else, whether it's, you know, dividends or profits or whatever they choose to do with it.
Is there a vision here, Philip, for a further chapter in subsidizing the corporate 1% to go a little deeper into the numbers to do things like decide whether the subsidies made the difference between profit and loss, for example?
Well, yeah. I mean, we really need to do more detailed analysis, at least of a sample of these companies to see whether, you know, A, whether they did, you know, in which cases the companies did create the jobs that they promised. I mean, this is another big issue with subsidies. Companies often get the money and then they don't create the jobs. Or second, what is the quality of the jobs that they created? You know, sometimes they create the jobs, but they might be substandard, you know, mediocre jobs. You know, our feeling is that if public money is going to be used, you know, for private investment, at the very least, what the public should get out of it are high-quality jobs. You know, not minimum wage jobs.
Let me go through the list again. We mentioned that Boeing is number one with a subsidy value north of $13 billion. The next closest is Alcoa with $5.6 billion. Then we get to the first company that's got ties to our region, which is Intel, based in the Portland area, at $3.86 billion. We can assume then that this is money that is coming out of local and the state of Oregon coffers.
That's right.
All right, let's take a call from Jim in Grants Pass. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking about subsidies for big companies with Philip Matera at Good Jobs First.
Yeah, one of the things I think we need to realize that budget committees in small areas like Josephine County, and I can think of a couple of things, when the infrastructure to help a big car dealership move in and whatever, that's offset by looking ahead at the increase in property taxes from properties all around that thing and employees buying a little better homes, paying property taxes in Washington where they have, I believe, sales tax instead of property tax. They're looking ahead at the, you know, increase of income of sales tax of higher employed people and everything. It's not just the immediacy of building a road and all this sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. So generating money down the road. Thanks for that thought, Jim. And what do you think about that, Philip?
Well, I mean, it's true that, you know, there are potential benefits, economic benefits from a community from, you know, this new investment. I think the question is whether the amounts that are being given out in the tax breaks and the subsidies, you know, are in proportion to the potential economic benefits. It just seems to us that in many cases, you know, they're paying too much for the potential benefits, and they're also overlooking the fact that not only are there potential benefits, but there are potential costs. you know, if the investment leads to a population increase in the area, you might need more schools, you might need more roads. You got to pay for those somehow. And if your biggest taxpayers are being given a huge break, other people have to pick up the slack.
Philip Montero is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. He's the research director for the organization Good Jobs First. We're talking about the recent report from Good Jobs First called Subsidizing the Corporate 1%, which is about how much money in subsidies goes to big American companies. Join us on the Jefferson Exchange when we return from this break. We'll be back on the program with Philip Montero and you in a minute 15. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange on Jefferson Public Radio's News and Information Service. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is Philip Montero. He's the research director for the nonprofit organization Good Jobs First, nonprofit and nonpartisan, we should point out. And we're talking about a recent report from Good Jobs First called Subsidizing the Corporate 1%, which is about the fact that when you look at state and local subsidies for economic development, they tend to go to companies that are already quite big. Boeing at the top of the list with $13 billion plus in subsidies dating back several decades. You can join us on the exchange at 800-838-3760, anywhere you can hear us. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. Our email address, jx@jeffnet.org. We've gotten through the top three, Boeing, Alcoa, and Intel. Intel, Oregon-based, at $3.86 billion in subsidies. And then we get the big three automakers in turn, General Motors, Ford Motor, and Fiat, which, of course, now owns Chrysler. All there at 4, 5, and 6. Nissan at number 9 on that list. So you got four of the automakers in the top 10. And again, this is state and local money. Obviously, there were the federal bailouts, not Ford involved in this case, and not Nissan either. But that's a lot of money from state and local entities that are going to help the auto plant. And it's not just Michigan. It's not just Detroit, right?
That's right. You know, it's a number of states. And, you know, auto companies are the kinds of, you know, traditional business that that state and local governments, you know, like to subsidize, you know, because they do create a lot of jobs and they do have a lot of kind of spin-off jobs, because you have not only the jobs immediately in the assembly plants, but you've got all these parts jobs and, you know, other kinds of businesses that serve the plants. They've also traditionally have been, you know, better paying jobs. So it's you know, it's understandable that, you know, this sector has gotten a lot of subsidies. Now, you could argue that maybe that even here that state and local governments have gone overboard in some of the subsidies. But this is the kind of area that economic development has traditionally been most comfortable with subsidizing.
Here's an email from Joe in Talent. He writes, "I'm always amazed when this information is presented as something we don't already know. Frankly, I've given up trying to fight about this because the situation will never change as long as we celebrate corporate greed as shining examples of capitalism. The bigger sin here is the more money we give these companies, the more they shelter overseas and less is put back into this country to help with expanding the economy. When the likes of GE can make billions in revenue and not pay taxes, and a Democratic administration does not see a problem with it, game over." Joe in Talent wrote that email.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's a lot of truth to that, although I would say that these subsidies, you know, perhaps the one positive thing can be said about all these subsidies is that they are related to domestic investment rather than foreign investment. You know, this is not money that's being used to encourage the kinds of overseas activities, you know, that a lot of provisions in the federal tax code do. So, you know, and that's part of, you know, one of the ways in which state and local officials feel justified in, you know, in giving out these subsidies. But, you know, that's not to say they're flawless, but there is a distinction between these and the kinds of things that are going on, you know, with all these kind of tricks being used to shift production overseas and shelter, you know, profits overseas.
So the idea being, if as did happen, the Oregon legislature makes a change that helps Nike with its tax assessments, it expects Nike to continue to have a presence in Oregon, and a big one at that. And in fact, there was some expansion tied to that legislative session.
Right.
Which brings up the question, and you hinted about this already when you talked about the Washington legislature and Boeing, this idea that, both Oregon and Washington have had special legislative sessions in the last year just to deal with one company each, in Washington's case Boeing, in Oregon's case Nike. And obviously this is a real by-the-numbers report, but have you noticed other activity at Good Jobs First where you got the state legislature convening just to talk about the business of one company?
Well, this has happened in other parts of the country. I mean, maybe the numbers in the Northwest are often pretty eye-popping, but it does happen elsewhere. To some extent, it reflects the different ways in which states approach these things. Some states have programs in place that allow large awards to individual companies without the direct intervention of the legislature. In other cases, you know, it requires, you know, a special legislative session. I mean, the problem is, you know, with these sessions, I mean, on the one hand, I guess it's kind of a good idea that there's, you know, supposedly more oversight being exercised on the deals, but often these things are done in a way that they're kind of rammed through the legislature. They're done in a kind of a crisis atmosphere, and the governor, you know, makes it sound as, you know, as if, you know, if legislators don't approve this immediately, the sky is going to fall. And, you know, all this works to the advantage of the company because often there's not enough time to do a thorough and critical assessment of whether these subsidy packages make sense.
Let's take another call. Here's Tim in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking to Philip Montero at Good Jobs First about the report subsidizing the corporate 1%.
Yes, hi, Jeff. Thanks for taking my call. And I support the guest's views quite a bit. I teach public administration, public budget, and finance. And I have kind of framed this within the context of what I call the three laws of politics, which is law number one, the organized prevail over the disorganized every time. And corporations tend to be the very model of high organization, of course, certainly compared to the public. The second law of politics is follow the money. And that's, I think, self-evident. And the third law of politics is whoever controls the media frames the debate. And present company accepted, corporations have a pretty firm lock on that dimension as well. Very briefly, getting back to an earlier caller from Josephine County, it's true that you can get some nominal increase in tax revenues from the workers at these plants that get subsidies. However, what that also generates is resentment against the tax structure, which corporations can then jujitsu to their benefit and have done consistently historically. I'll just leave it to your guest to comment further.
All right. Thanks so much for that, Tim. Appreciate it. Philip, your thoughts on what Tim was just talking about?
Well, I agree. Those laws certainly make sense, and I think they're quite relevant to the material in our report and in our database, and in fact the work that we do overall. About this issue of the money, additional tax revenues being paid by employees of subsidized operations. You know, one irony is that there's a form of subsidy that involves the diversion of the tax revenues paid by employees to their employers. We did a report in 2012 called Paying Taxes to the Boss. And this was an analysis of the way in which, you know, many states now have programs that incentivize corporations by saying that the withholding taxes that their employees pay, you know, in new jobs on a new facility go not to the state but go to the company, to the employer, as part of the incentive. And, you know, we think that this is really kind of a pernicious practice, because it's another way of diverting essential revenue, you know, away from public services and toward companies that may not need them.
We've got another email here from Ray in Montague, California. He writes, so the conservative line trumpeted during the last presidential election saying that I built this myself really doesn't hold any water at all. Seems that the makers need all of us takers to help them make it. What did they actually do by themselves? Figure out how to leverage the government into giving them free stuff? The well-known glaring example here is, of course, Walmart getting all kinds of favors from local government to locate locally, then becoming a liability when we have to help support their employees. That, again, from Ray and Montague. Walmart, I don't see them in the top 100 here, but they're in that top 965, was it?
Yeah, I mean, Walmart is, we actually did a separate website some time ago on Walmart on both of these issues, right? First is the economic development subsidies that they get from state and local governments. And unfortunately, a lot of the deals that they got are ones that are not in the official lists of subsidies, and a lot of them are below the $75 million threshold that we used when we reconstructed what we called our mega deals. So if people want to see more details on that, we actually have that website is called Walmart Subsidy Watch. It's still up, and there's a link to it on the Walmart parent company page, on Subsidy Tracker. So that's one issue. We're now planning to try to integrate all of those other entries into the main Subsidy Tracker to show the bigger picture of Walmart's subsidies. But then there's this other category that was just referred to. We call them hidden taxpayer costs. These are the ways in which the public sector has to, make up for the fact that Walmart is not paying its employees enough to basically to survive and not providing them decent health care coverage. So these people have to, rely on programs such as Medicaid and food stamps and so forth in order to get by. So those are, that's in effect the hidden taxpayer cost linked to the low wages paid by Walmart and many other large companies for that matter.
Another email here from Jacob in Gold Hill. He says, what you're describing is corporate welfare. An earlier caller spoke of what benefits come to communities who successfully compete for large companies. Why is it a good thing to give corporations welfare, but a moral hazard to help out people and families who, if given help early, might become better, i.e. bigger, taxpayers in the future? Doesn't that help the future? That from Jacob in Gold Hill. Here's a call from George in Wairika. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Philip Matera from Good Jobs First.
Well, thank you. Does the Fox situation play into the tax subsidy thing in which their viewpoint is only for corporate welfare and none for the somebody that's working for money? And yet people wind up, because of the propaganda, if that's the right word, voting for something outside of their own best interest. And I'll take my answer off the air, please.
All right, voting against your own economic self-interest, is that something that has been
discussed? Well, there's a lot of that going around. The issue about the Fox, et cetera, there's really a kind of a division on the right on this issue, right? There are some people who are just as opposed to subsidies as we are, because they see it as an interference in the marketplace, and they don't like the idea that government is in effect picking winners and losers. I mean, they tend to focus on the federal government when making that criticism, but it's also relevant for when state and local governments give out these packages. Now, what they want is to cut taxes across the board for all businesses, rather than giving special tax breaks to individual companies. Then you've got other people, other conservatives, who just like the idea of giving business whatever it wants, wherever it wants. So, there is that, that division on the right, just as there's kind of a division on the left. I mean, we're obviously more in the liberal camp. We're very critical of subsidies, but there are other people, liberal types who just like the idea of giving money to companies if it results in more jobs. And they feel like, we've got a long-term unemployment problem. The government should do something. If the only way to do it is to throw money at companies and hope that they create jobs, so be it. So it's a complicated issue. Cuts across partisan and, you know, party lines.
I want to talk about the we have about a minute left here, but of the top 100 list, there's not only the parent company listed with the subsidy value, but also the number of subsidies. You point out in the report that Dow Chemical tops them all with somewhere north of 400 subsidies, 416 altogether. But then when I look at the other ones on here, Boeing, for example, the aircraft maker, Ford, 173, the car maker, 222 for Federal Express, 255 for General Electric. It seems like this is the kind of thing that happens with the military-industrial complex as well, figuring out if you build a fighter jet in eight different states, you get that much more support for it and subsidies as well.
Yeah, there's something to that. You know, some of these companies have facilities in a lot of different places. I mean, Walmart, that was mentioned before, is a classic case because it has so many stores and so many places, it tends to get lots of relatively small subsidies from many different places, whereas other companies that have a smaller number of giant facilities may get a smaller number of facilities, but each one, you know, may be worth much more. So, and before we run out of time, I want to make sure everybody knows that the report and the subsidy tracker database are both available at no cost at our website at goodjobsfirst.org.
All right, we are linked to that on both our website and on our Facebook page as well. I want to thank Philip Matera, the research director at Good Jobs First, for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Happy to do so.
All right, good to have you. Tomorrow on the Jefferson Exchange at 8 o'clock, we'll talk about history available in a new format, a CD from Dennis Powers, a Rogue Valley historian. We will also talk about the folks who run the Operation Speak for the Trees, and then we'll talk to the people operating the Siskiyou Film Fest coming to Grants Pass later this week, a bunch of environmental films screened at Grants Pass High School. That's all coming up tomorrow on the Jefferson Exchange. Our producer is Charlotte Duren. Our student assistant at the controls today is Reed Newland. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Please join us again tomorrow at 8 for another edition of the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. And have a great day.